Well, hello, good morning. It's 11:05, it's Sunday morning, and it's Folk Tales on Abbey 104. And in the studio today, I've got, as always, a very interesting guest. With me today is Paul Gould of the Yeovil Railway Centre. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, and thank you for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
And just give us a quick snapshot of what the Yeovil Railway Centre is.
Well, the Yeovil Railway Centre is many things, really. We started 1994 with the intention of preserving the mainline turntable at Yeovil Junction Railway Station, which was in danger of being taken away or scrapped at that time, and providing other facilities for mainline steam.
Yeah,
this was done, and later on we went into other activities. We run our own train days, we do educational visits, and many other things nowadays.
Well, that sounds very interesting. So this is a preserved railway, effectively, these days, is it?
It's almost a preserved railway. We call ourselves a centre. You tend to think of a railway as several miles long. We don't have a track that's several miles long. We have a demonstration line which is a third of a mile long, but then we preserve lots of the very interesting railway history that's at Yeovil Junction.
And you do quite a range of events, don't you? I've seen your leaflet, got it here somewhere, which outlines, well, pretty full itinerary through the year, really, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. We're open regularly from March right through to the end of October, and then again in December for Santa specials. So really we only have off when we're not open to the public in November, January and February.
Yeah, I see. Okay. So we're going to talk a lot more about that, but also a little bit about you. So before we do that, let's take your first track. You've chosen six records for us, and the first one is Fortunes, Caroline. And why did you choose that one?
Right, well, this one takes me back to my youth, long time ago now.
Oh, not that long, Paul.
Oh, Terry, you're too modest, you're too kind, very kind. No, in my, I was born in 1950, so I was brought up in the early 1960s as my formative years, and I was brought up in Gillingham in those days, and we used to, there was two or three of us who listened to the pirate radio stations in those days. The signal wasn't terribly good because it was a long way from the North Sea, so we connected up wires and all sorts of things to try and improve the signal. One of my friends used to always boast about Radio London, and I was the Radio Caroline fan, so that's why I've chosen this particular track to go back to my youth.
And this was actually used as a signature tune for a pirate radio station, Radio Caroline, at one point, I think, wasn't it?
Indeed, it still is. The station's been up and down many times. It's been sunk. It's been shipwrecked. it's now a legitimate railway radio station. They broadcast on the internet. They also broadcast on DAB, and they've just recently got a AM broadcasting license for their part of East Anglia.
Right, okay. Anyway, let's play the track, shall we? It's The Fortunes and Caroline.
Thank you.
Well, that was The Fortunes and Caroline from 1964, chosen by my guest in the studio. That's Paul Gould of the Yeovil Railway Centre. Paul, we've talked a little bit about what the Yeovil Railway Centre is all about, but let's just go back a few years and talk a little bit about your early beginnings. And I think you were born fairly locally, Weymouth, wasn't it?
I was most definitely born in Weymouth. I was born in the old workhouse, which, no, it was converted to a maternity hospital, but long since demolished.
Right, okay. And that was much, your early life was spent down there, was it?
Only for the first 7 years, because my father was worked for the Westminster Bank, and he got a transfer from Weymouth up to Gillingham and Dorset. So I always call Gillingham as my hometown, because I can't really remember much about Weymouth in the early days.
No, sure. So you moved to Gillingham when you were seven, dad was in the bank. And, well, there's a theme there, which we'll come to in a minute, obviously.
Indeed.
But, so early days in Gillingham, you went to school there, presumably?
Yeah. I went to Gillingham School, which had just turned into a comprehensive school when I arrived. So all my time from 11, 12, up to 18, I was spent at Gillingham School being so-called educated.
Right, and you were living at that time in the bank house, I think you said, didn't you?
Yeah, for some of that time. Unfortunately, my father passed away whilst I was at Gillingham, so we moved from the bank house at Gillingham up into a bungalow up in towards Harding's Lane.
Okay, and it was you and, well, then your mum, and did you say you got a sister, is that right?
No, I have an older brother, he wasn't there. He's much older than less pretty as well.
Okay, so you early days in Gillingham, happy childhood, you remember, good memories?
Yeah, school wasn't really my thing. We had a gang of people there. Never quite my thing, school. So, but yeah, Gillingham's a nice place. I still go back there, have a look round from time to time. Still got a few friends round there.
Yeah, okay. What about the early railway interest? Is that coming to the fore yet or not?
Yes, railways, can't put my finger on where that started. It's always been something that's interested me. I can remember back at Weymouth having an interest in railways even at that age. But when I went to Gillingham, it's just something that was there. I can't say one particular thing started the interest off, but railways has always been of interest to me.
And in Gillingham, in the, well, this would be the sort of late 50s then, this, well, that was very much steam in those days, wasn't
it? I can remember one or two steam engines at that time. Obviously, the line was dieselised in the 1965 or thereabouts, okay. Mm-hmm. So I was had a lot of schoolwork to do at those times, but I can remember going down the station, doing the old, talking to people down there, being allowed to switch the gas lamps off from time to time and various things like that.
Yeah, so it was a growing interest even in those days.
Absolutely, yes.
But not something you thought about going into as a career then?
No, I was guided, shall I say, by my father at that time, and later on by my mother, into following him in a career in what was the Westminster Bank at that time. So when I left after doing A-levels at school, I went or sent for an interview with the bank, and I was accepted. And thereafter, that's where I stayed.
Okay. So you went into the bank then at 16-ish?
18.
18, okay. A-levels.
Yeah, after A-levels.
Yeah. And that was locally, was it?
Started at Sherborne, mm-hmm. in what's now Sherborne Cheap Street branch. Yeah. So that was my very first job. Used to sit there with what we called handwritten ledgers in those days. So people's cheques were all entered in longhand in these books. Somebody else went through the same cheques and put them onto a machine, and then you had to call them back to make sure they agreed. And it's not like the computers of these days.
It's changed a little bit, hasn't it?
Very much so. Yeah, it's a long, laborious business, and every half year you had to have a major balance, and sometimes if it didn't go well, you would be there till 1 o'clock in the morning trying to find a difference.
Oh dear. Hardly bear thinking about it. So, but that was, that was banking in the late 60s when you started then, and I tend to think of it as being quite a sort of hierarchical, austere type of profession in those days. Is that right?
Yes, it was very much different to the banking that is around these days. It was a service industry. You looked after your customers. Mm. You did your very best for them. The manager was the manager. You would turn up probably 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, maybe go home 3 o'clock, having done 2 or 3 interviews with customers, and it was very different, indeed.
I think that's changed now, hasn't it?
Just slightly.
Okay, so early days then started in Sherborne, but then banking in those days, they moved you around quite a bit, didn't they?
Yep, you were expected to move around, so when you were deemed ready for a promotion or maybe a move on to another office, you were said, Mr. Gould, right, you're, next week you're starting at somewhere else, and off you would go. You'd end up in a hotel for a few weeks, maybe bed and breakfast or digs, and you were expected to move, and that was, in some ways it was good, but in other ways it was difficult, particularly for families who were not necessarily, after 2 or 3 years, put down a few roots and then suddenly having to get up and move again.
Yeah, absolutely. So you weren't really given very much choice in the matter. You more or less had to go.
Unless you had a very good reason not to go, you would have done your career no good whatsoever to have turned it down.
I see. Okay, so where did that take you? I think Crewkerne was the next.
Crewkerne, yep. So that wasn't very far away. So I was there for a couple of years. Then I went down to Weymouth, where I met my wife. Mm-hmm. Then I went lots of places, really. I don't want to bore your listeners, but I went down to Swanage, then Exeter, Plymouth, Wells. Then I did a little spell on what they called inspection, which okay. Probably known as auditing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Bridport, Sherborne again, and ended up at Wincanton.
So that list of places, I mean, there's obviously Plymouth and Exeter are a bit more far flung, so it was house moves in those days.
Absolutely, yeah. Yep. We bought our first house in up to near Poole. We then had to move down to Exeter. We moved down again to Plymouth, and moved again up to Wells, and then ended up in Yeovil. So quite a few house moves.
Quite an upheaval, really.
It was, and sometimes only after 2 or 3 years, it is difficult for the families.
Yeah, definitely. But that's what it was like in those days, wasn't it? And you couldn't really do a lot about it, as you say.
No. It was difficult. If you turned down your move, you'd be a long time in your job before another opportunity came along.
You could be fairly sure that you'd stay put for a few years.
Yes.
Okay. So what about the railway interest in the background whilst all this is happening? Did you just have to park that, or were you able to maintain it?
No, obviously, when I got a family, that took a lot of time up. It used to take a little time out to go and pursue a railway interest, but it wasn't a great deal of time.
No.
Because you had to go to work Monday to Friday and sometimes on Saturdays as well.
Oh, okay.
So very little time for doing anything very much else.
No, I see. Okay. And so, really, that sort of took you through your whole working life, didn't it? You didn't move out of banking at all?
No. Spent my entire life, started off with the Westminster Bank, which then, shortly after I joined, became NatWest, because it joined up with the National, Provincial and District Banks. But no, that was my entire career.
Okay. And enjoyable, if you look back on it?
It's curate's egg, really. When I first joined the bank, it was a great job. Thoroughly enjoyed it. So that's my thing, is looking after customers, doing the best I can. I was never really a salesman, and although I did try, because that was what I paid to do. But it wasn't really me. So towards the end, it became a lot harder, and in the end, I was quite pleased to take an early retirement.
Well, everybody needs a break from it after a while anyway, don't they? So
yes.
And you'd done, well over 30 years.
31 years, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So you came out of banking then in, what was that, late 90s, presumably?
Yeah, it was the 31st of December, 1999. So I started off the new century with a new outlook.
Wonderful. And did you have any thoughts then at what you were then going to do?
I was going to have a break. Yeah. That was my only real thought then, is have a break.
Yeah.
It was a little while, after about 6 months, I started thinking, now I've had my break, what should I do now? Because although the banking was not quite my cup of tea at the end, let's say, the interaction with customers, interaction with staff, was always something which was great. Thoroughly enjoyed talking to people. So after that, thought, maybe there was something else I should be doing. And
okay. Well, we'll move on to that in just a minute. But let's have your second track now, which is the Beach Boys. Why is this one a special one?
I don't profess to be any connoisseur of music. My choices are largely 1960s type music, and the Beach Boys was well up there with the track's nice summery sound, really.
A great reason to choose it. Beach Boys, Good Vibrations.
I love the colourful clothes she wears and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. On the wind that lifts her perfume through the air. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. Good vibrations. Softly smile, I know she must be kind. In her eyes, she goes with me to a blossom room.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me excitations. Good vibrations. Thank you.
Well, there we go. That's the Beach Boys and Good Vibrations from 1966, composed and written by Brian Wilson and Mike Love, and almost certainly, well, definitely did get to number one in the UK. And that was chosen by our guest today, Paul Gold from the Yeovil Railway Centre. And Paul, we've been talking about your early life and how you came to be, well, you were born in Weymouth and came up to Gillingham, started in the bank, went all over the place in the southwest, and ended up at the end of it all in, well, Sherborne or thereabouts, didn't you?
Was Wincanton.
Wincanton,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. And that was 1999, the last day of 1999, you came out of banking.
Yep.
And breathed a huge sigh of relief and said, thanks very much. But then, of course, you then had to get another job, or what did you do?
No, I had a break because I hadn't had a... only a sort of annual break, so I took 6-9 months out, I suppose, and then started thinking, well, something missing here. So I knew somebody through my contacts at the railway centre who said, well, why don't you come and go out and see if you can get some greetings cards put into places. So I tried that for a little while, but there again, that was more of a selling job that wasn't really me.
Right.
So... I then went back to the bank, believe it or not, but just sitting
after,
on the counter.
All you've said, you went back.
I went back, yeah. But really just sitting on the cash as a cashier, which was lovely because I dealt with the customers when I went home at 5 o'clock or thereafter. That was it. Didn't have any more responsibilities. Did my job. Looked after customers. And that was fine. I much more enjoyed that than the role I was playing before.
Yeah, I see. Okay. So that was that's really the working side of things. You did the part-time at the bank then for another few years, did you?
Yes, it was on a sort of casual basis.
Yeah,
so when they were short of a person in whatever branch, off I would go and felt very valued when I got there because they used to say, thank goodness for that.
Wonderful. Okay, well, let's think now about the Yeovil Railway Centre. Now, that's sort of developing in the background here, because that, I think I wrote down here somewhere, 1994, was it, that started?
Yes, the first meeting of the people who were involved with the Yeovil Railway Centre was convened at the Raffa Club in Sherborne in the January 1994.
Okay, now, how did that come about? I mean, tell me, first of all, Yeovil Junction Railway Station has obviously been there for well over 100 years, maybe more than that, you'll tell me. But bits of it had fallen into disrepair or weren't used anymore.
Yes, the Yeovil Junction Station has been there for about 150 years now, but it was rebuilt in the early 1900s into the form that is still there today. Basically, it's got two island platforms with lines either side of the islands. And it also had two through roads, so the fast trains from London to the West Country could storm through Yeovil Junction without having to stop or go through the platform roads.
Yeah.
The Dr. Beeching comes into this somewhere along the line. His report favoured the what was known as the Western Route from Paddington down through Taunton and Exeter and on to Plymouth as the main line, but keeping the Waterloo to Exeter line as a secondary route. So what happened in the 1960s was that a lot of the lines, the through lines, some of the platform roads were all taken out. Obviously, some of the smaller stations between Salisbury and Exeter were closed. A lot of the line was singled. So it didn't resemble a main line anymore. Right. It was basically a secondary route served by unreliable diesels, some old rolling stock, and passenger numbers fell through the floor, basically.
Okay. And it was around about that time that Yeovil Town Station would have closed, I presume?
Yes, yeah. It was around about the same sort of time. It's rather ironic that the only station in the middle of Yeovil was the one to close, with Yeovil Penmill and Yeovil Junction staying open, although they weren't actually linked by services anymore, whereas obviously before there was a shuttle service either running from Yeovil Junction to either Yeovil Town or Yeovil Penmill. All that went, though fortunately the line linking Yeovil Junction to Yeovil Penmill is still in existence, and there is a service of some trains on a Monday to Friday now, which uses that
quite line. A recent thing, isn't it? Because that's been disused for quite a while and used for diversions and things.
That's absolutely right, Terry. When the line between Taunton and Exeter is closed for either engineering works or some other emergency, the HSTs from the Western line are sent up through Yeovil and use that diversionary route on the spur between Junction and Penmill.
Okay. So in the 60s, then, Yeovil Junction station was in decline, really, by the sound of it.
Very, very much so. At one time, Yeovil Junction was slated for closure, with all the passenger traffic being moved over to Sherborne, but there was a loud outcry at that time, and it was eventually decided to keep the Yeovil Junction, although on a much reduced scale. In fact, at one time, the line through Yeovil Junction itself was singled, so there was only one basic platform line. It's still in use, together with the bay, but there was a bit of a problem with a mail train near Sherborne at one time, which came off the rails, I believe, soon after it had been singled. So they reinstated the double track back from Sherborne down to Yeovil Junction, and eventually made Yeovil Junction station into a passing place as well. And since then, there's been various developments up and down the line, putting bits of double track back in, such as Axminster. There's a Tisbury loop. There are other plans which would see other loops put into place, but whether there be the money for it in the near future,
so is the question.
Big question mark about that.
It's ironic, isn't it, that a lot of the beaching closures are now being looked at again with hindsight, and obviously, you know, 40 or 50 years worth of hindsight, and thinking, actually, if only we still had that railway.
Yes, it is difficult with hindsight. Obviously, we say, oh, that shouldn't have happened. There is a lot of disquiet, really, that the line was singled in those days. I think a lot of people actually thought that was a mistake even in those days. But it was done, and we are where we are.
Absolutely. So Yeovil Junction station itself, then, as we say, was a bit of a shadow of its former self, and it previously had four platforms, didn't it, as you've described?
Yeah, it only ever had three platforms as such. Right. The one line where we are was actually never used as a passenger line, but there were two platforms for the mainline trains, plus one bay, which was originally went round to Yeovil Town, and latterly it was used for services to Yeovil Penmill.
I see. And for anybody that knows Yeovil Junction station, the footbridge that gets you access to the main platform, of course, used to go right across to the other platform, didn't it?
Yes, indeed. The half that linked over to where we are on the what we call the downside of Yeovil Junction was removed in the 1970s. Presumably, as it was no longer required, and if they took it down, it wouldn't have to be maintained any further.
Sure, okay. So when you came to all of this then, or the Yeovil Railway Centre came to it in the mid-90s, that side of the station had pretty much fallen into dereliction, had it? It was not really used for anything.
No, there was, in what we call the transfer shed, there was a business doing fabrication of parts for traction engines, I believe, at that time. But the other station, the other part of the station, was completely unused, and it was a real mess, really.
Right, okay. So this group of interested people came along. How on earth did that happen? How did anybody come up with an idea of bringing it all back into life?
The main feature which we were interested in that time was the turntable, which had been put in into Yeovil Junction in 1947 by the Southern Railway, was in danger of either being taken away or scrapped at that time. So the two of the railwaymen thought that this was not a good idea, and that if the turntable was removed, there would be no opportunity for mainline steam to come to Yeovil in the future, no reason to. So there's a group started by the instigation of some railwaymen to preserve the turntable in its current situation, and then to plan ahead and provide other facilities for mainline steam, such as watering, coaling, ashing, that type of thing. So it would continue the mainline steam coming down, you know, to Yeovil.
I suppose we should just say, for anybody listening who's not familiar with a turntable, and maybe some of the youngsters wouldn't be, this was the facility. Steam trains don't run terribly well backwards, do they? So
some of them don't. Some of them were designed to, but steam engines which have a tender in particular really need to be turned at the end of their journey so that they're facing the same way on the return journey, so the driver can look out through the cab windows and see the line ahead.
Yes, it's easy to forget that nowadays. Everything runs in both directions, doesn't it?
That's absolutely right.
Okay, so this group of people got together and thought, well, gosh, we want to keep this turntable. How did they set about doing that?
They went and talked to Railtrack in those days, and Railtrack, and indeed Network Rail afterwards, have always been supportive of railway preservation. They got a temporary licence to get onto site to start some initial repairs. Obviously, the turntable needed some attention, not a great deal of attention in those days, but they needed lots of oiling. The motor on there to turn the turntable had not worked for some time, so that had to be overhauled and new hoses put on it.
Presumably it hadn't done a day's work really since the mid-60s or thereabouts.
Not a great deal. No. Occasionally it had been used for turning some civil engineers' track machines, not a great deal. Although shortly before we took over, there was an area manager from Salisbury, and he instituted a series of steam trains which ran down to Yeovil and used a turntable. So it was sort of greased and had a quick look at in those days, but it had to be turned by hand because the motors wouldn't work. And so that was another something to get the group galvanised to continue that steam.
Well, look, we're getting towards the point where the Yeovil Railway Centre is being sort of conceived and brought up to what it is now. Let's take your next track before we go on to that, which is The Beatles. And just another favourite?
Just another favourite, and I thought because of the sunshine around, why not?
Okay, it's The Beatles with Here Comes the Sun.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right. Thank you.
That, of course, is The Beatles and Here Comes the Sun from 1969 from the Abbey Road album, covered by various others, including Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel, notably, I think. In the studio with me, it's Paul Gold on Folk Tales on Abbey 104. And Paul is the main man and the leading light behind the Yeovil Railway Centre. We've been talking, Paul, about your early life and then how the idea for the Yeovil Railway Centre came about. And that was all mainly in the early days connected with the turntable, which had fallen into disrepair. And you got together a group of interested people and you decided, hey, let's get this thing working again. You went to Railtrack and they were quite supportive by the sound of it.
Yes, indeed. Yep. The railway authorities, although they're very hard work to deal with, have always been supportive, and particularly the local people, you know, amongst Network Rail are always willing to help us, you know, to the best of their ability. Okay. And you know, been really good.
So how did you find people that were interested in this cause?
The original meeting was advertised. That was a little bit before my time. I didn't join for another year or so afterwards, so I didn't attend the inauguration meeting, but it was one of those things that I think there was about 20, 30 people there who all joined up, and since then it's just grown. There are people of all walks of life, all ages, who have an interest in railways, come together for the cause.
I see. So it began to happen. Railtrack said, yes, okay, you can do something here. And it started to grow beyond just the turntable, though, didn't it?
Yes. Once the turntable had been refurbished and one or two other bits for the main line steam had done, then people's thoughts turned to, what else can we do? Next idea was to try and find a little steam engine for Yeovil Junction that would work on the short line that is still in existence, the third of a mile that I mentioned earlier on.
And then just before you move, what actually is that line? What was it previously used for?
Right, the Clifton Maybank branch was a Great Western Railway broad gauge branch originally, built in 1864. And it was built joining the Yeovil Penmill to Dorchester line. There's a junction at Clifton Maybank Junction, came underneath the Waterloo Exeter line and curved around up into what is the downside of Yeovil Junction. That was a broad gauge track, and the idea was to transfer goods from broad gauge wagons to standard gauge wagons at Yeovil Junction.
Okay, right, and that's hence the name transfer shed that you referred to earlier.
Yes, indeed, right. That's right. There was a platform in the open air and also a smallish shed. It's a medium-sized shed with a little office where there'd be some workers who would take goods out of broad gauge wagons and put them into what we call standard gauge wagons and vice versa, because Mr. Brunel's broad gauge wagons, 7 foot and a quarter of an inch, wouldn't run on the standard gauge rails of 4 foot 8 and a half.
It's difficult to comprehend these days, isn't it, how inefficient that must have been until the whole thing was unified.
Indeed. The broad gauge only lasted for about 10 years in the Yeovil area, because it was put in 1864, and in 1874 it was all made into standard gauge. So the reason for the transfer shed being built was then non-existent.
So that piece of track then was your gain, because that was still there when you took over the site in the late 90s. And what did you do? Had it been converted to standard gauge?
Oh, yes, yeah. It was converted to standard gauge in 1874.
Okay.
But it was truncated, so it just became a siding in the 1930s. So when we took it over, it was the remains of the siding that ran down. There is still a Great Western milepost there alongside the track, very interestingly. And obviously the transfer shed is still in existence, Which needs quite a bit of money spent on it, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, maybe. All right, so the Yeovil Railway Centre then started to gain interest amongst the local community, and you started to get people coming along to help. And how did it grow? What happened?
As I say, the thoughts turned to what else could we do. One of the people that was involved had an interest in a little steam engine that was previously at Hereford. There was a railway preservation site at Bournemouth Cider, and they had a Peckett engine which was built in Bristol and some other wagons there. Bournemouth decided that they would have to close the site down, so this little engine was looking for a home, and it was ideal size for what we could use up and down our third of a mile track. And so there was agreement made with the group who owned the loco at that time to get it transferred down to Yeovil.
I see. Okay, so that then came, you got it to your site. Did it need refurbishment as well, or was it good to go?
The engine itself was good to go. Mm-hmm. The track wasn't necessarily ready to go, so there was quite a bit of work to replace some of the wooden sleepers. And then, obviously, you then turn to the thought, well, we've got this engine, where are we going to keep it? So then you need covered accommodation for it. So then there was a idea we should build an engine shed, which is actually an engine shed and a workshop, which was built, and I believe I've got the date here when this was opened. It was opened in late 1999, but it was still very incomplete in those days. And we're still adding bits to it as and when time and money permit now.
Okay. And the whole thing then has... You've gained members, because this is a membership organisation, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. We're a charitable organisation. Yeah. We're a company still, but we don't issue shares, so we're limited what they call by guarantee. So if we ever are wound up, members are asked to pay £10 into a pot if necessary. Yeah. Hopefully that will never, ever happen.
Quite so. But the whole idea then, it grew, and a lot more people became interested in it, and it's got to be quite a big concern now, hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know about big, but it's certainly more than a small organisation now. We have somewhat over 300 members who sign up for each year. And at a push, we could probably get 40 volunteers out for if we had a really major event coming up, needed a lot of people to attend.
Okay. Look, we're going to play your next track, and then we'll come back and talk about exactly what it is now and how we can help, and if anybody's interested in getting involved. But we've got Baker Street coming up by Jerry Rafferty, a pretty well-known one, this. Just another favourite?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Let's have a bit of Baker Street, then, from 1978.
Thank you.
Jerry Rafferty in Baker Street, from 1978, chosen by Paul Gould, my guest in the studio, from the Yeovil Railway Centre. Paul, the clock as always is against us, so let's come right up to date. The Yeovil Railway Centre grew from its inception in the sort of mid-90s, and you've added bits on, presumably, have you? And
we've got two steam engines, although the original Peckett is now being overhauled as part of its 10-year overhaul cycle. Yeah. So that's out of service, but we have another steam engine there called Lord Fisher. We've got a miniature railway there, a model railway, and lots of special events coming up for the rest of the year.
Okay, tell us about what sort of events you hold there.
We have regular steam train days from March round through to October. Next one is coming up on the Sunday, the 4th of June, when not only have we got the steam train day, but we've got a teddy bears picnic there.
Okay.
The one after that, on the 18th, we've got some motorbikes coming in from West Dorset, so that should be good. And our major event this year is on the 8th and 9th of July, when we're having events to mark 50 years since the end of Southern Region Steam.
Okay.
There's mainline steam booked in on both days, which is great.
You talk about mainline steam, just again to be clear, that's something that comes along the mainline from Cherbourne or somewhere?
These are both coming from London. One is coming down to us and then going on down to Weymouth. The other one is coming down to us and then returning from us back to London via the Portsmouth line. So these are mainline engines that were running around in the 1960s.
Okay, with a full complement of carriages and passengers?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. They arrive at the normally disused Platform 3, so passengers can get off and join in the festivities.
I see, and presumably you've got, what, a cafe and shop and things there to entertain them while they're there?
That's right. On both those days, there'll be model railways running. I think we've got some people exhibiting creepy crawlies, and there'll be hopefully have some real ale as well. So, there'll be lots of things for people to enjoy.
It's quite a big thing, isn't it? Because I don't know how many passengers would a train like that hold, but quite a few.
Yeah, a full train could hold 400 or 500 people. So they
all descend upon you at once.
Yeah, the one on the Sunday is also stopping at Sherborne, so some of the people will probably get off there and go to the Abbey and have a look round. But, that should be good for Sherborne as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So on a normal day then, you say a steam running day, what does that comprise? You've got your little engines and they run up and down the track, do they?
Yeah, with the track either in a brake van, which used to be at the end of a goods train, or we've converted a coach, which we use particularly at Christmas and at other times. That's also disabled friendly.
Yeah.
They enjoy that. They've got a miniature railway there, the model railway. We do a demonstration of the turntable as well for the educational purposes.
Okay. Right. So you've already said you've got 300 members or thereabouts, and presumably you'd like more. I mean, how can people get involved and what do you need?
Probably our biggest need is either people with special skills, engineering skills, or people with lots of money. The money is always good. I mentioned very briefly the transfer shed is in need of a new roof, which is going to cost £40,000, I expect.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the engines always need maintenance. Each 10 years, we've probably got to spend £30,000 on them to get them back ready for the next service. So it's a constant fundraising and spending on the other side, although we try to do new things as well.
Okay. It's significant sums of money, isn't it, when you talk about this?
It most certainly can be. We've got plans to put a new toilet block up there, and we've got some tentative plans to extend the railway slightly as well, which all will take money.
So if people want to get involved, they can obviously come along to your events, and you've got a website, haven't you, which tells them all about that.
That's right.
Do you want to give the address out?
Probably the best thing, if people would like to Google, put it into a search engine and put in Yeovil Railway Centre, and it will pop up, and there's a contact page there. Though the email address is just yeovilrailway@hotmail.com, and that will get through to me.
So if anybody wants to give you £100,000, they can email you?
Yeah, well, come and see me, please. Thank you.
You'll make time in your schedule for that.
In my busy schedule, there will always be time for that.
Okay, look, we're going to run out of time shortly. Let's round off with a bit about you again. Railways, obviously, a very major interest and has dominated through your life. But what else do you do? You've got a slightly quirky hobby, haven't you?
My wife would say it takes up far too much of my time. Yeah, we also do our hobbies includes a thing called geocaching,
right,
which is basically treasure hunting with a GPS machine or an application on a smartphone, finding treasure in the countryside or in towns, come to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something we've been doing for the last 7 or 8 years, which is great fun. We were out round Sturminster Newton yesterday, and it takes us all sorts of places that we would never ever find.
And I think you mentioned to me an interest in football as well.
Yeah, somewhat depressing interest this last year in the Yeovil Town Football Club. It's one of the things I've been attending since my teenage years. Yes, a season ticket holder, and I hope for better times this next year.
Oh, hopefully so. Look, Paul, it's now a couple of minutes before the hour, so we're going to have to round off. But
thank
Paul,
you.
Thank you very much for coming in. It's fascinating, the story of how the railway centre has come about, and we wish you every success with it and hope it goes from strength to strength.
Thank you, Terry. Yeah, it's been a pleasure coming
in. Your final track is by The Who, I Can See For Miles.
Yeah,
another favourite.
Well, it just goes in with the geocaching because we like walking on tops of hills.
Oh, lovely. Paul, thanks a lot.
Pleasure, Terry.
I know you deceive me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, because there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and that I don't know about the little tricks you play, and never see you when deliberately you put things in my way. Well, here's a poke at you, you're gonna choke on it too, you're gonna lose that smile, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. You see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. You took advantage of my trust in you when I was so far away. I saw you holding lots of other guys, and now you've got the nerve to say that you still want me. Well, that says maybe, but you gotta stand trial, because all the while I can see for miles.